Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report here in this big old empty, echoey building. Feels like the end of the world, but at least I can step outside of this building and feel even more like I'm in The Walking Dead. It's great times in 2020. I'm joking and sarcastic, but there is one thing that's great. You know what's great? Today's co-host, Anna Kasparian, back on the show. How's it going, Anna?
I mean, the world's falling apart. The world's falling apart, but it's good to be here. I love doing the show with you, so thank you for having me.
And I love having you here. It's been a little bit. You co-hosted the show last week with Francesca, which was great.
Yes.
Great reviews. The reviews were better than I want them to be. Like, I want them to be here, and they were like here, and that's where it gets a little bit scary for my future. But good overall. Good overall.
Yeah, I had a fun, I mean, I enjoyed doing the show. I'm actually shocked that the audience liked it as much as they did, because that morning was a nightmare and I was like a mess. It was chaos. I was kind of in a bad mood, but I guess being in a bad mood sometimes makes for decent content. So thank you for everyone who sent nice notes about that show. Hopefully you liked today's episode too.
I hope so. And you know what? That's great. You know, I'm going to do everything I can to put you in a bad mood. And I think we've got the stories to accomplish it.
I'm sure
we're going to be talking about Bill Barr, never a positive thing. The vaccine timeline, heat rays, that's fun. We have one new ad, a Midas Touch ad that uses some of Trump's Bob Woodward quotes, I think to devastating effect. So we'll be going over that. Maybe that'll be a little bit of fun. But you know what could be fun if you will play along, Anna Kasparian? I think it's time for another appearance of an adorable, friendly pup on the show. So if we get to enough likes on the stream, let's say 2000, we're at 450 right now. Lots of people in the stream apparently slacking, waiting to hit the like button later on. I understand, pace yourself, you don't wanna hurt yourself, but let's hit it eventually. Maybe we'll get to see Charlie. Wouldn't that be nice?
Charlie's in the room with me. Hopefully he doesn't bark during the show. But I will promise Charlie is the reward today. He loves being on camera. He's a little bit of a camera whore.
He is. If he wants to bark, he can bark. I don't mind. By the way, I can see in the comments, Helen Gardner says, Anna is one of my female icons. Javier says, I love Anna. I love J-Flo and Dragon Squad First Class. Thank you. I've never been called that before. And I'm not sure the audience will want it to continue. But anyway, everybody who's watching, please hit the like button, share the stream, all of that. We'll be responding to your comments, your tweets, your Twitches, your super chats. Maybe they've invented new things. I don't know. A bong. Bong us and I'll read it or look at it. I don't know exactly how bong works, but you know, consider bonging us. And with that, why don't we jump into our stories? Because we've got a lot to get to, including, I'm not even gonna say what the story is, but we've had a story that we prepped for our first show this week that we just keep pushing. Let's see if we get to it. I don't know if it's gonna happen. But anyway, let's talk about Bill Barr. The Attorney General has been on a tear over the past few days, attacking Black Lives Matter, implying that we might have to start locking up mayors. And then also saying this about the national lockdown that supposedly America had earlier this year.
Putting a national lockdown, stay at home orders is like house arrest. It's other than slavery, which was a different kind of restraint, this is the greatest intrusion on civil liberties in American history.
That was a short clip, shorter than most, but man, I hate every word of it. I hate every pixel of it. Anna, what did you think? It's been going around.
Well, I think that William Barr is just adding more fuel to the ignorance and stupidity that's been, the main response by right wingers in this country. I'm specifically talking about the electorate. You know, I understand the need to be skeptical of what the government asks you to do. I think that a healthy level of skepticism is okay. But I completely disagree that this was done with the intention of violating civil liberties. We're talking about social distancing guidelines that could have, if they were implemented properly and actually followed properly, could have saved tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people's lives. This is a pandemic. That means that you need a collective effort in order to basically slow the spread of this incredibly lethal virus, especially for people who have certain pre-existing conditions and members of older demographics. Mm-hmm. what William Barr is doing in that statement is basically telling people, no, it's okay. You're actually being much more patriotic in endangering your life and the lives of others by refusing to follow these guidelines. And yeah, it sucks because it doesn't matter how much of a compassionate person you are, how much you take science and the medical advice from people like Anthony Fauci seriously. If you have a significant portion of this country completely disregard what they need to do to protect themselves and others, your actions and your efforts mean nothing. And that's why we're still dealing with increasing numbers of coronavirus when other countries have actually gotten a pretty good handle on it.
Yeah, exactly. He seems to imply, and is he not merciful, that slavery, which he terms another type of restraint, is arguably worse. Okay, we'll give him slavery, but other than that, this is the worst. And obviously, people were right to fight against slavery, ergo, you're right to fight against this unconstitutional, you know, tamping down of your rights. And it's pretty much this and slavery, and that's it. But you know what? We've got an awesome, very well-educated audience. So let's play a little game in the comments. So let's see if you can think of other worse offenses against American civil rights and liberties other than just slavery and the constitutional limitations provided by this national lockdown. Those are two data points. Let's see if we can fill out that timeline a little bit. And also, I mean, one part that maybe we can just briefly focus on, the national lockdown was a big violation of our civil rights. What national lockdown?
Yeah.
What national lockdown is he referring to there? We didn't have one. We didn't have one. What we had was some areas locking down. Okay, generally across the country, you've had states and localities at various times, to various degrees, with various levels of penalties, having sorts of lockdowns. There was no national lockdown. Trump has fought against it from the very beginning. And on the state level, Republicans have fought against it. So, oh my God, we've got a lot of historical notes coming in. Well, the forced hysterectomies are definitely another good violation of our civil rights and liberties. There's a lot of other good ones being listed there in the comments. Yeah, Jim Crow, that was only like, you know, 60 years plus of persistent violations of civil rights. Mass wave of lynching across the entire South. Yeah, lots of good
info
there. No knock warrants. You know, it continues till today. But there was no national lockdown. If there had been, perhaps I'd be doing this show from an Applebee's indoors right now with no mask. But we didn't do that. That's why everything is still so locked down. That's why I'm in an abandoned building.
Yeah. I just think like the absolute disregard for human life is jarring with this administration. And the fact that the Trump administration is just willing to politicize anything for their own political gain, right? They love to make people who are not victims out to be victims. And then their supporters take that message and run rampant in our cities. You know, they run into local Targets screaming at patrons who are wearing masks while they're indoors. I mean, that's what they've created. They've created this incredibly dangerous and divisive environment where people think that they're airing their grievances because they think that they're some sort of victim of a big government. We do have a problem with big government when it comes to certain elements of our personal lives. You know, I mentioned no knock warrants because when you really think about it, in the case of Breonna Taylor, local authorities can literally lie to a judge in order to obtain a no knock warrant and then show up in the middle of the night into someone's home with a battering ram, by the way, to get inside, plain clothes, shoot you up, murder you, and not have to face any consequences for it. That's what happened in the Breonna Taylor case. The cops lied to a judge by saying that the Postal Service informed them that suspicious packages were showing up to Breonna Taylor's home. Later, the postal inspector was like, no, actually no one said that. They lied to the judge. And you know, our civil liberties are being violated left and right every single day in real ways. Those stories get ignored. Those types of cases are encouraged by the Trump administration. But when it comes to something as simple as wearing a mask and attempting to just stay indoors and stay away from other people so this virus doesn't spread and kill more individuals, no, that's where the government is a little too big. That's where civil liberties are a problem.
Exactly.
And as you mentioned, there is no federal lockdown. There never has been, there never will be.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, no, and I mean, you're right to mention the no-knock warrants. I mean, you know, like plainclothes police officers driving up in a Kia minivan, snatching people off the street and driving them away. And God help you if you fight back against what appears in every way to be a kidnapping, because then they'll just gun you down and face no consequences. Barr doesn't appear to have a problem with that. And every right winger in the country doesn't appear to have a problem with that, because they care about law and order and they care about the Constitution and they certainly care about civil liberties. That wasn't the only thing that Barr has been up to recently. Attorney General William Barr also has floated the possibility, apparently in private, of locking up Democratic politicians that he doesn't like. On a call with federal prosecutors last week, Barr told officials to consider charges against Seattle's mayor for allowing a police free zone in the city and to weigh charging violent protesters with sedition, according to the Dow Jones and the New York Times. Sedition, okay? Seattle's mayor Jenny Durkan said the statements were an act of tyranny, not of democracy. Now, what I found most interesting about this is not just that the chief law enforcement officer for our entire country is saying, yeah, that mayor might have to be locked up. And if you go to a BLM protest, you might face charges of treason effectively. It's that he said all of this on the same day, apparently, that news broke that he also criticized what he called the criminalization of politics, railing against television pundits for speculating on whether an official's deeds constitute some esoteric crime. He said, now you have to call your adversary a criminal. And instead of beating them politically, you try to put them in jail, saying that the US was becoming akin to an Eastern European country. What administration exactly is he a part of that he thinks the other side is criminalizing politics? And by the way, he might be locking up the mayor of Seattle too. So balance those two things, stuff those both in your head and see if they work out. For some right wingers, apparently it's okay.
Yeah, this administration ended up being far worse than even I expected, and I knew it was gonna be bad. What we're seeing is our entire democratic system getting dismantled by one administration, our actual civil liberties and freedoms deteriorating. And at the same time, you know, there is this well-funded, well-organized group of right-wing media pundits who are basically controlling the narrative of everything that's going on. I mean, it's incredible how people can experience their own loved ones die during this pandemic. They can see their own material conditions deteriorate. They can see how this Trump administration has been brutal to their standard of life, their quality of life. But all you need is a well-organized propaganda machine on the right to really control the narrative and somehow pin the blame on people who have no power. That's the thing that really blows my mind. The people who, whether it's politicians on the left or left-wing voters, they have no power right now. And yet somehow the right-wing propaganda machine is incredibly effective in convincing Republican voters that, you know, their lives are being destroyed by powerless people. It really is incredible.
100%. And I remember William Barr, and I'm not gonna read all the other graphics, but you know, he attacked BLM. He said that they're looking for props, and he said that the myth of police brutality is distracting from black on black crime, just to give you an idea of what he thinks about non-white individuals. That sums it up pretty well. I remember during the confirmation hearings when we were talking about why he was being chosen and who he would be. And we knew then, and we know now, like he is every, you know, German officer that stood happily next to Hitler and carried out his agenda. Like Trump is a monster. He's an absolute monster, but he needs other monsters to really get this work done. And Barr is that guy. Barr will happily serve alongside Trump. He could dissolve the Senate. He could. There's no sign that Barr is not going to support. Barr is interested in power on the right, not democracy, not the Constitution, not law and order, literally nothing like that. And that was fairly obvious during the confirmation. So I want to once again congratulate Democrats Joe Manchin, Doug Jones, and Kristen Sinema for voting to confirm William Barr. Doug Jones saying he's qualified and will remain independent. Joe Manchin at least is consistent. He voted for Brett Kavanaugh and Jeff Sessions. Yeah, all of them signed on to this. Rand Paul, by the way, was the only Republican that voted against it. Actually for once being consistent with the principles that he likes to pretend drive his politics.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the most devastating realizations that's come along with the Trump administration is just how many fascistic people exist in this country, both in the electorate, but also people who've had positions of power in the past, but were brought on again by Donald Trump to serve in his administration. People who are either too cowardly to speak up in an effort to protect our democratic process, or people who, you know, absolutely agree with Trump's agenda and do want a brutal, tyrannical government running this country. It's a sizable portion of this country. It's just something to keep in mind. And this is why it's so important to, you know, if you're on the left and you're hypersensitive about things and you need trigger warnings, you probably need a trigger warning for what I'm about to say. And I apologize if this offends you. We need to ensure that we don't allow sensitive feelings to override the importance of learning about our history and learning about our history accurately, okay? So if you're in some sort of history class and your professor reads texts that has words that you find offensive, please understand the context in which that professor is reading that material. Understand the importance of knowing what kind of language was used in the past. Because if we try to change the way we learn history, we're not gonna be able to learn from history. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And history will repeat itself. And I think we're seeing that right now. We need to refocus our energy on what the immediate threat is. And the immediate threat is not hurt feelings. It's what this administration is doing to essentially turn this country into something that's ruled by an authoritarian regime. Our democratic system is being dismantled right before us, right now. And I don't know what the solution is. I don't know how to effectively fight back because everything we've done so far has failed. But we have this election coming up, and I am not certain that the election is gonna be carried out in any type of fair way. I'm not certain that Donald Trump will step down if he loses the election. At this point, I'm not even sure Biden would beat Trump fair and square because of how poorly he's running his campaign. We're in a pretty devastating place in America right now. And we just need to reorganize and focus our energies on things that actually matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think he has to lose. We have to engage in an election that'll be fundamentally unfair and the vote will be suppressed and somehow still succeed because there's no checks and balances that are going to work. There's no norms that are gonna protect us. There's no protest that's gonna do it. The media fact checking, none of that is going to work because they don't care. You can't shame them. You can't point out their hypocrisy. You can't, none of that works anymore. We have to get them out. That is literally the only way to stop the suffering, or at least begin the process of it anyway.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I I know that we're all eagerly anticipating a vaccine because it seems like a vaccine is the only thing that's going to allow America to go back to normal. I mean, I know masks would 100% do it, but we're not going to use those because we're selfish, awful, anti-scientific people. And that's why a lot of people were sort of disheartened yesterday when Dr. Robert Redfield, the director of the CDC, said, if you're asking me when is it going to be generally available to the American public, speaking of a vaccine, so we can begin to take advantage of the vaccine to get back to our regular life, I think we're probably looking at late second quarter, 2021. That was during congressional testimony to the Senate Appropriations Committee. And so the idea that a year possibly plus will pass before we have access to this vaccine is scary, I think, to a lot of people. So don't worry, you don't have to be scared though, because Donald Trump is here to tell you that that idiot director of the CDC doesn't know what he's talking about. Here's Trump at yesterday's press conference.
But then he said that the vaccine for the general public likely would not be available until probably next summer, maybe even early fall. Are you comfortable with that timeline?
No, I think he made a mistake when he said that. It's just incorrect information. And I called him and he didn't tell me that. And I think he got the message maybe confused. Maybe it was stated incorrectly. No, we're ready to go immediately as the vaccine is announced, and it could be announced in October, could be announced a little bit after October. But once we go, we're ready. But when I called up Robert today, I said to him, what's with the mask? He said, I think I answered that question incorrectly. I think maybe he misunderstood it. I mean, you know, you have two questions. Maybe he misunderstood both of them. But the answer to the one is it's going to be a much faster distribution than he said. Maybe he's not aware of the distribution process. It's not really his thing as much as it would be, let's say, mine. But the distribution is going to be much faster. As far as the mask is concerned, I hope that the vaccine is going to be a lot more beneficial than the masks, because people have used the masks. And as far as the mask is concerned, he made a mistake.
Okay, so Dr. Redfield, director of the CDC, doesn't know anything about masks, doesn't know anything about the vaccine, the timeline, the distribution, anything. And he was so embarrassed by how stupid he had been in his answers that he immediately called Donald Trump to apologize for being so wrong about it. Those are all things that totally happened, Anna.
Yeah. So I don't want anyone to misinterpret what I'm saying as, you know, being dismissive about this story, because what Trump is doing here is dangerous. It's awful. And a lot of people are going to die as a result of that. But I do want to just give people a note to not panic, because if you are receptive to medical experts and the science-driven information they're giving us, then you already know how to keep yourself and your family members safe. Mm-hmm. So the masks are incredibly effective. I don't want to say masks in general, because there are differences in the effectiveness depending on what kind of mask you're using. So please read up on that. Social distancing is incredibly effective. The information that we're getting from Anthony Fauci on a regular basis, and to some extent, yes, Redfield as well, is useful and it is effective. And as long as we utilize it ourselves, we can keep ourselves and hopefully our family members safe. That's the good news, right? Even despite all of the disinformation we're getting from the Trump administration, we're still luckily getting the important, accurate information we need. And as long as you're reasonable and you listen to that, you'll be okay. That's really the only positive thing I can say about this story, right? Because at this point, we're living in a situation where we do not have a collectivist effort to combat this virus. We don't have any leadership. We have a very intentional disinformation campaign coming from the Trump administration. And really, the only thing we can do is hone in on our own communities and do what it takes to communicate the actual scientifically driven data to those around us. And hopefully people will listen and we can move forward in a more effective way. But sitting around and waiting on the federal government to take a common sense leadership role in this is naive. We're never going to get that. I'm not waiting around for a vaccine, to be quite honest with you. I've always been skeptical of a vaccine coming out by the end of this year. So I'm not shocked by the update on the vaccine at all. But the only thing I would urge people to do is to ignore Donald Trump. Do not take his advice. If you want to stay healthy and alive, just listen to Fauci, do what you need to do. Please wear a mask. It doesn't need to be this difficult.
Yeah, well, look, if you're not gonna be waiting around for a vaccine, you may not have to wait much longer, because remember at the ABC town hall, Trump said we're within weeks of getting it. You know, could be 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but I think we have it. That was a few days ago. So now it's like less than 3 weeks.
Yeah, look, Donald Trump is insane. That's it. That's it. Donald Trump is mentally ill. I'm not holding back from saying it. He has a mental illness, at the very least. He's sociopathic, in the very least. He's not to be trusted. Again, if you really value your life and the lives of people around you, please listen to the science. Please do the right thing. Wear the mask. This doesn't need to be a big political issue. And if the death cult wants to engage with death cult activities, I can't lose sleep over it anymore. You know,
yeah, 100%.
The information is out there. The information is out there. Knowledge is power. Knowledge will literally keep you alive during this pandemic. If you're one of the people who thinks it's cute or funny to storm into an indoor Trump rally without masks on, I guess that's your liberty, right? That's what you get to do. Just understand that people like me, we want to stay away from you. That's it.
Exactly. Anyway, look, obviously it's a lie. I only mentioned that timeline. It's one of two things. Either it's how he says everything is coming in 2 to 3 weeks, and that means never. Or I just want everyone to be ready for, I've been saying it over and over, he's going to announce distribution of a vaccine before the election. And it doesn't even mean really that he's rushing it. Like, he could announce it and say it's coming, and they could have produced none, but he's gonna say it. And it's gonna get fact checked. You know, within a day or two, we'll have congressional testimony. Now there's nothing. We don't have anything. But I'm saying there will have been a news cycle already. So everyone needs to be ready and need to start talking to people to get them ready for what will definitely be an attempt to swing this election in his favor immediately before it, which is definitely coming, possibly in 2 to 3 weeks. As a reminder, Joe Biden is the Democratic candidate for the presidency this year. I know it's easy to forget that from time to time, especially if you live in certain states where apparently they're not really doing much in the way of campaigning. There is a insane report in Time right now about the state of the campaign in Michigan, for instance. Let's update you a little bit on how things look. And bear in mind, this is about the Biden campaign in 2020, not about the Clinton campaign in 2016, even though it sounds kind of similar. So it's not even clear that Biden has opened any new dedicated field offices in the state. Because of the pandemic, they've moved their field organizing effort online. The Biden campaign in Michigan refused to confirm the location of any physical field offices, despite repeated requests. They say they have supply centers for handing out signs, but would not confirm those locations either. The campaign also declined to say how many of their Michigan staff were physically located there. When the reporter Charlotte Alter asked Biden campaign staffers and Democratic Party officials how many people they have on the ground in Michigan, one reply stuck out, quote, "What do you mean by on the ground?" So we have more, which we'll get to, but that's a lot already. So Anna, how do you feel?
I feel that Biden has a decent chance in losing. And I'm not saying that to be hysterical or scare people. I'm saying it because he's making a lot of pretty significant mistakes, including everything you just detailed right now. You know, there's been actual research done into how effective social media activism is, for instance. And guess what? It's actually not very effective. So if the Biden campaign has decided to move everything to online organizing, there's a very good chance that it won't be effective. And there's a very good chance that they're gonna fail in reaching out and connecting with the voters that they need to convince to vote, right? So because one of the biggest issues is, yeah, people don't like Trump, people don't like the state of you know, this country. But you need to give people enough energy, enough motivation to either mail in that ballot or show up to the polls to vote. And that takes a lot of work, that takes a lot of organizing, that takes a lot of persuasion. And I just haven't really seen much of that by the Biden camp. And it was something that I suspected earlier, but once this news story broke, it just kind of confirmed what I was already suspecting. And you can see it play out in the polling, specifically in the swing state polling, where Biden initially had a pretty big lead over Trump, but he's closing that lead quite a bit. Trump is, he's narrowing that gap between himself and Biden.
Yeah. Well, look, I know that they'll say, you know, it's the pandemic, but the thing is, there are still things you can do, and you can wear masks and you can knock on doors and talk to people from 12 feet away or something like that. Yeah, it's not ideal. Nothing in 2020 is. You could still do it. But to give you a little bit more from this article, there are no young volunteers in Biden shirts pounding the pavement for their candidate, no clusters of posters marking the Biden field offices in various precincts, few bumper stickers on the highways. There are more Biden signs than Hillary Clinton back in 2016, locals say, but not enough to give the impression of an enthusiastic presidential campaign in a crucial swing state. So let's give their side, because all of this is obviously very critical and I think realistic. The campaign says it's reached out to 1.4 million voters during the Democratic convention and the weekend that followed, with 500 digital organizing events and 10,000 volunteer signups. In the week before Labor Day, the campaign sent 500,000 texts to Michigan voters, one every half second. It has just replaced the trappings of a traditional ground game, volunteers knocking on doors, distributing literature and so forth, with a digital field operation. But again, as we said, we don't necessarily have much faith that that's actually a one-to-one replacement, that that will actually necessarily work.
Yeah, I hope they're right, but the evidence doesn't bear it out. I mean, again, you just look at the polling. Look at the polling and what's happened, you know, in the last month, for instance. So they can tell us that they're doing all of these great, fantastic things to get out the vote for Biden. But whatever they're doing, I just hope that they're looking at the evidence and like recalibrating their strategy here. Because if they're refusing to take any of the evidence seriously, well, then they're gonna lose. And by the way, Biden needs to win by a lot. You know, it's not,
Can't squeak by.
He can't squeak by, exactly. He needs to win the popular vote by a pretty significant margin in order to win the Electoral College.
Now, let me give you a little bit more good news, I guess context. So let's talk about Michigan over the past few years. In 2018, Dems flipped two House seats, kept a Senate seat, and elected a Democratic governor. Last year, they knocked on more than 85,000 doors. In the August state primary, Democratic turnout was at a record high. And as many people have pointed out, while there is obviously an enthusiasm gap in terms of wanting to vote for Joe Biden, over the past few years, we have had quite a few elections that have demonstrated that Dems want to vote against Trump. So I don't like that as your principal strategy, but that doesn't mean that it isn't going to be at least somewhat effective. However, in Michigan in particular, let's take a look at the sort of polling period over the past few months. Biden is still leading by a few points, but you can see that it has narrowed. Now, it has narrowed before and then widened. We can't say for sure exactly how things are gonna work out, but it's still closer than I would want it to be, you know? And Hillary lost by, was it 10,000 votes, I think, in 2016? Like, I don't want another squeaker like that, especially in an election where Trump is getting ready and Fox News is getting ready to claim that anything other than an incredible blowout is illegitimate, and in fact, possibly even a blowout would be. They have to take this seriously. They still have 2 months. You have $1 billion. You can send people to Michigan and begin knocking on doors. You can sign up volunteers. If you want volunteers, there's a lot of progressives that were you to make a few policy concessions, you might get them to start pounding the pavement for you. They've done it for other races. This report is not coming out 2 months after the election. It's coming out 2 months before the election. It could be a cautionary tale rather than, you know, like a repeat of 2016. But I hope that their campaign is listening. They're actually gonna do something about this. Whether Biden cares enough, someone on his campaign has got to do better.
Yeah, and one final thing about this, you know, earlier in the week, there was a story involving Bernie Sanders. It started off with a piece in the Washington Post where people close to Sanders shared that he's concerned about how Biden's performing and really wants Biden to shift his focus on the bread and butter issues that really do motivate young voters to get involved and show up to the polls. And it's you know, just focus on wages, focus on jobs, focus on the climate and the environment, like things that people actually want to see change toward. And, you know, of course, you have the corporate Democrats who think that, oh, this is just Bernie and his camp being overly critical of Biden. No, people are panicking because they want to beat Trump. And you need to shift your focus on things that inspire people to vote. This whole, you know, campaign has really been about, well, I'm better than Trump. Trump is awful, but I'm better. Okay, but how? How are you better? Right? Be specific. Talk about your policies. Talk about how they're better than Trump's. Talk about what you're gonna do about wages. Talk about what you wanna do about the environment. Look, part of the problem is Biden's policies don't go far enough, but they are demonstrably better than Trump's. So explain how. Don't just, you know, dedicate the entire Democratic National Convention to how you're more empathetic than Trump. Yeah, I care about that, but that's not the end all be all. That's not gonna inspire people to go out and vote.
Exactly. Okay, you remember the protests outside of the White House that Trump violently dispersed with tear gas and people being beaten so that he could go do a photo op in front of a church and hold a Bible upside down, which I think is one of the signs of the Antichrist. I'm not sure, I'm not a Christian or anything, but certainly not a good sign. Anyway, it turns out that could have been even worse because the military police preparing to strike against those protesters had a few asks. Equipment that they wanted that thankfully they were denied. So Major Adam DeMarco of the DC National Guard said he was copied on an email from the Provost Marshal of Joint Force Headquarters National Capital Region. He was looking for two things, a long range acoustic device, a kind of sound cannon known as an LRAD, and a device called the Active Denial System or ADS. So if you just say Active Denial System, that doesn't sound so bad, that could be anything. Turns out, kind of horrible. The ADS was developed by the military some 20 years ago as a way to disperse crowds. There have been questions about whether it worked or should be deployed in the first place. It uses millimeter wave technology to essentially heat the skin of people targeted by its invisible ray. It was shelved amid concerns about its effectiveness, safety, and the ethics of using it on human beings. And you can sort of understand why. Effectively microwaving protesters seems arguably unethical. Pentagon officials were reluctant to use the device in Iraq. Think about that as context. They were hesitant to use it in Iraq. Of all the things that we did, this is where they were like, well, come on, that's a little barbaric. I don't know about this. Anyway, the Trump administration had weighed using the device on migrants at the US-Mexico border, but Kirstjen Nielsen shot it down, citing humanitarian concerns, and said that no one was to bring it up again in front of her. And again, like with the generals in Iraq, even for Kirstjen Nielsen, this thing seemed to cross a line. So Anna, they didn't end up having one to use here, but a request was put in to use a heat ray on Capitol Hill protesters.
It shouldn't surprise anyone. It's a devastating story and it still makes me sick to my stomach. But if you really take a second to look at the bigger picture and what Americans have allowed to happen for decades with this military industrial complex, of course these weapons would be used against us eventually, right? If we're okay with this type of brutal force being used abroad, and I know you mentioned that there was the potential of using these heat rays against Iraqis and it wasn't. But still, this technology, this type of weapon was still created, it was built. What do you think it was built for? Possibly for use abroad, and eventually it will end up in our local police departments, as most Pentagon weapon inventory does, and it will be used against people like us. That's why we can't see ourselves as different from civilians abroad. We can't see ourselves as somehow special compared to citizens in other countries. If our government is willing to develop this type of technology to brutalize others abroad, I have no doubt, and we have seen proof that the very same weapons will either be considered for use against Americans or eventually will actually be used against Americans. That's why it's so important to have an internationalist view of American politics, because the actions that we take that impact other countries abroad will come back to us. And by the way, I mean, I'm making that argument for people who only care about themselves, but we should show solidarity with people abroad. We should care about human lives abroad. It shouldn't always be that we're the priority and Cubans in other countries are somehow dehumanized. That's what happens over and over again. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, 100%. You know what? I wanna. Can we skip to the photo? Let's bring up what this looks like. This is a thing that was requested to be used against those protesters. Like,
yeah,
that's what they deploy against Godzilla in the movies, effectively. Not people who were protesting against the president. They had guitars. That's what they had. They had flowers. They were peaceful protesters. And look, they didn't use the ADS. Okay, and they apparently didn't use the LRAD either, which is apparently its own problem, because you're apparently legally obligated to inform protesters about the plans to clear out an area. They clearly didn't do that. People didn't know. That's apparently breaking the law. LRAD, which can be used as a sort of sonic cannon, also can be used to relay those sorts of orders. It's a very mixed thing. But anyway, they may not have had the heat ray, but let's remember what they actually did. They did gas those peaceful protesters. They did go into the, you've seen the videos, just swinging clubs and full body shields and things like that, brutalizing people, including members of the media, just so that Trump could walk across and look like a tough guy. He obviously failed at that because he doesn't have the physical capacity to do so. But that was the desire, to brutalize the protesters. They didn't microwave them, but they did brutalize them in the end.
Yeah, and there's a point to brutalizing them. It sends a message. It's meant to intimidate protesters. It's meant to send a message to anyone who plans to organize and take action out on the streets. It's a form of intimidation. So it's just something to keep in mind as every single year, both Democrats and Republicans sign on for budget increases for the National Defense Authorization Act. That's the military budget. These lawmakers need to be held accountable because our taxpayer money, we are funding, we are literally funding through our federal taxes, the development of these types of weapons, which certainly get used abroad on people in other countries. But then, of course, eventually will be used against us. We are funding our own destruction every single day. And at the same time, when we need unemployment insurance, when we need help during a pandemic because tens of millions of people have lost their jobs, the federal government, including congressional Democrats, give us a giant middle finger. When it comes to increasing the military budget, oh, no question, of course we have to do it, right?
100%, yeah. Yeah, it all comes back. It's a peaceful protest. Midas Touch is a progressive group that has put out some absolutely devastating ads against Donald Trump through the course of this pandemic. As soon as the Bob Woodward interview quotes came out, we knew that the ads would be following. Take a look at this one titled hashtag Trump lied, 200,000 died.
It goes through air. You just breathe it. That's how it's passed.
He knew it could cost him votes.
It's more deadly than your strenuous flus.
He knew it could cost him ratings.
Turning out it's not just old people, Bob.
Yeah, exactly.
Young people to plenty of young people.
He knew it could cost him popularity.
This is deadly stuff.
So Donald Trump hid the truth about COVID-19.
It's a little like the regular flu. If you're healthy, you'll be fine. Children handle it very well.
This is their new hoax.
It's going to disappear.
And cost more than 200,000 people their lives.
Be calm. It's really working out. I think we're doing a really good job.
He lied. People died.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Plain and simple. Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this ad.
Yeah, and I would expect that you're probably going to see a lot of ads like that. I mean, he has provided everything that in a rational country would doom his chances. It'd be the greatest electoral loss in presidential history. It's not gonna be because we don't live in that sort of country anymore. But that's an absolutely devastating ad and 100% an accurate depiction of the way he talked in public and the way he talked in private and the huge, massive and costly gap between those two things.
Yeah, that was a great ad. That was a very effective ad, the kind of thing that you would see Republicans put together. Republicans are great at messaging, and I've always been so frustrated with the left and how hands off they are when it comes to negative advertising. There used to be a political culture in America where people didn't like to go negative. We're past that. We're way past that. And it is important to really highlight the reality of Trump. And what Trump has done effectively is just flood the news cycle with so many horrific acts that it's hard to keep up. It's hard to keep track. And I think that this particular story is something that we should not let go of because so many people have died and Trump continues to minimize the pandemic. So I'm really happy to see a progressive organization, Midas Touch, put out such a great. And I hope that they do ad buys in swing states and really amplify and emphasize the fact that Trump just does not value anyone's life. He doesn't value what's in the best interest of his own voters. The only thing Trump has valued is his own political ambitions and his own financial interests. And we've seen that over and over again. I mean, as a sitting president, he got in trouble for using his own charitable foundation to enrich himself. He was running a scam with the Trump Foundation. And that's just one of the little stories that came up during his first term. So we can't lose track of how horrible he's been to this country. We can't lose track of how his lack of leadership and the fact that he intentionally downplayed this virus has led to 200,000 people dying. More are gonna die in the coming months because he continues to belittle it and minimize it. It's been an absolute disaster. And it's so sad to see what's happening and how still at this point, at least 35% of the country is 100% on board with him getting reelected.
100%, they will take a look at that, the quotes day by day, him saying it kills you if you're young. Then he comes out in public and says you're gonna be totally fine. Then him saying it's way worse than the flu. And then he goes out and says that it's much easier than the flu. Just back to back, it's absolutely devastating. You should not be capable of winning an election after saying those things, considering the cost. But yeah, we're in a failed state, so it is possible. 200,000 have died between now and the election. I'm gonna say 30 to 40,000 additional deaths. Let's say 10 to 15 more 9/11s will happen. Most of a Vietnam, effectively, between now and the election, on top of all of the crises that we've already had. In the most recent reporting, 1,202 COVID-19 deaths reported yesterday. 1,200 in one day, again and again and again and again and again. One of those days would be a disaster. And how many people even acknowledge it on a daily basis that it's happening? Maybe because it's too horrible, or maybe because it's inconvenient, for their economic plans. But it's absolutely devastating. Can't be pointed out enough. I love that Midas Touch makes ads like this. Joe Biden needs to be making ads like this, as strong as this, reminding people of the cost. Again, because Trump could have, if he had just taken the pandemic semi-seriously, he would have cruised to victory, considering everything else that's true about America, how broken it is, the voter suppression, all of that. Now, he's already failed worse than any American president has domestically failed in our lifetime. And between now and the election, he will continue to fail on a daily basis. And it's gonna be a nail biter, best case scenario. It's crazy, it's absolutely crazy. But good ad. Good job, Midas Touch.
Yeah.
You've probably known the story for quite a while, that at one point, Michael Cohen, former very close employee to Donald Trump, had been walking with him at a golf club. Donald Trump commented on the physical appearance of a woman that he saw playing tennis, saying that he would like a piece of that. And Michael Cohen pointed out to him that that was Michael Cohen's 15-year-old daughter. That's just what Trump does. That's just what he does. And we've known that story for some time. But now Samantha Cohen, the former 15-year-old that Trump had sexualized in that way, went on CNN to speak with Allison Camerota about it. And here is how she talked about that particular incident.
You were at President Trump's, well, he was just Donald Trump, his country club. And you were playing tennis and you came off the court. And here's how it was written in Vanity Fair. Somehow Trump's attention was diverted to another skirt walking off a tennis court. Quote, look at that piece of ass, Cohen recalls Trump saying as he whistled and pointed. Quote, I would love some of that. It so happened that Trump was referring to Cohen's then 15-year-old daughter, Samantha. Do you remember that moment? Because it goes on to write that after that, you came over, he wanted you to give him a kiss. And he said, when did you get such a great figure?
So as I told Emily, the story is a little bit less clear to me. I'm sure many women can relate. You become desensitized to men making these kinds of comments to you and you allow them to go over your head and you kind of tune out the noise. But what stood out to me in that moment was he said to my dad, well, there's no way that she got her looks from you. Thank God you married a beautiful woman. And I was desensitized to men making creepy comments about me, but I was not desensitized to someone blatantly insulting and degrading my father in front of me, someone who I looked up to and loved very much. And that was very upsetting to me. And that made me think, okay, maybe Trump doesn't treat my father's.
So yeah, I mean, it's obviously horrible that by the time she hit 15, she was already incredibly desensitized to the sorts of comments about herself and was therefore focusing on the Michael Cohen stuff. But yeah, no, it totally happened. And that is, let's say the 30th creepiest thing that we have him saying about underage girls. Doesn't yeah. really crack, you know, doesn't really break through to most people because he said such more horrendous stuff, you know, including about his own daughter, his own flesh and blood. But the only reason I bring this up is we're in a time where millions of Americans say there is one story going on in the world, and that is the international network of rich elites and their pedophile rings and the sexualization of children. And not one of these sorts of things breaks through to them. That yeah. maybe it's not just Bill Gates and Tom Hanks and Chrissy Teigen that are eating children. Maybe the politician that you think is gonna crack down on the whole thing. Maybe he's been sexualizing kids the entire time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And you know, I think there are two camps that we need to consider. One camp consists of people who might have mental health issues, might just not be rational people, don't really care about the truth, might be dishonest actors. I know I'm lumping in a lot of people together, but that's the group of Trump supporters and QAnon conspiracy theorists that you know, you can't make a logical argument to, and it's really a lost cause. It is what it is. They're gonna see that the videos of Trump sexualizing underage girls, they're gonna hear his comments. It does not persuade them, they don't care. However, I think it's important to consider that you know, this whole QAnon conspiracy theory has expanded among the electorate, particularly on the right. And QAnon has created, you know, some interesting entry points for logical people who mean well, but they don't know that they're, you know, maybe following a hashtag that seems completely innocent. But what's behind that hashtag is a pretty organized group of people who are trying to spread a conspiracy theory. So I actually came across a family member of mine who had reposted a QAnon conspiracy theory with the hashtag Save the Children. Save the Children is a super innocent sounding, awesome sounding hashtag, right? It seems like the type of activism you'd want to get involved in. Of course, who doesn't want to save the children? The problem is it's one of the entry points on social media to begin to radicalize certain people, unsuspecting people, into this whole QAnon conspiracy theory. And there needs to be a concerted effort to I guess debunk those theories. I think there needs to be a way to inform people and educate people about what's really going on. I think that the whole conspiracy theory community is constantly like mutating into like different things. For instance, there are people who go to like these QAnon gatherings, right? And they have no idea about what happened. I believe it was Comet Pizza in Washington, DC, where there was a conspiracy theory about how this random pizzeria in DC was running a child trafficking ring. Of course, that wasn't the case. Of course, it was complete nonsense. But there was an unhinged lunatic who shows up with a gun and could have potentially killed innocent people as a result. If you talk to some who follow the Save the Children hashtag and go to these gatherings, they don't even know about that, right? Some of them are completely unaware of it. So. Yeah, it's just something to keep in mind as this type of story develops, because it is incredibly dangerous, it is damaging. And the way that social media companies run does help some of the most dishonest, destructive people in society radicalize unsuspecting people.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that people need to take it seriously, especially since we're gonna have at least a few elected officials after November that support the QAnon theory. You know, here at TDR, we're QAnon free. We follow R. He's got the true predictions of what's gonna happen. But anyway, yeah, one thing that I just wish, and my last point is, I wish in America we could ever have an extremist, crazy, radical movement that's at least kind of consistent. Like, if the crazy anti-abortion people really cared about the kids, and also like they did like a bit of picketing of abortion clinics, and then they also like demanded that low-income women get money and resources so that they can bring up their kids and with a high quality of life or something, like make it consistent. Like if the the intellectual dark web actually seemed to care at all about free speech outside of being paid huge amounts of money to give speeches at colleges, like ever, even once, that would be cool. And then with QAnon, I think that there are some regular people that are worried about kids. I think a lot of it is just political opportunism. A lot of it is just people who need something to distract them from how horrific the world is, and they don't really care about the kids at all. It's just this seems exciting. And then I think there's a significant number that are, like I'll just say it, that have really perverted views of children. I think that that's probably, I'm not saying that they're active pedophiles, they sleep with kids, but I think to go about your life believing that it's rational to think that the vast majority of Americans or people around the world wanna sleep with 12-year-olds, if you believe that, I really do think that that says more about you than about the rest of the world, because that seems crazy to me. I don't think that's what people are like. And as I mentioned on the main show, a major QAnon subreddit shut down because the guy running it admitted in a big post that you can read that he had been struggling with desires to look at child pornography for literally years. It's this weird sort of projection. But anyway, I'm just saying, if you're gonna be a part of it, I'm not saying you have to trust every one of the accusations against Donald Trump, but just understand that these aren't crazy speculation. He is on the record on video sexualizing young girls, whether they're blood related to him or otherwise, going back literally decades. Just appear, pretend to factor that in to your ongoing campaign against the international child trafficking rings. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, Anna, that leaves us with just one thing for this show, because you know what? We're at 3,400 likes. And that to me,
that's a lot.
That's a lot. You know why it's a lot? Because people want dog.
You guys delivered. Okay, so give me one moment while I go get Charlie. He's very excited.
Sounds good. Well, I'm more excited than him. So I'm gonna start looking at some of these super chats while we do that. Diane Raymond says, hi, doctor from New Zealand after a month. Okay, I'll come back to your super chat because. Oh my God, look at his little paws, his little dangling paws.
Say hi.
Charlie, I miss you.
Do you want a treat? Oh, do you miss Uncle John? Charlie. Do you want to go see Uncle John? He's like a little sleepy because he was taking a nap. Now I feel a little bad.
Oh, no, that's okay. People don't understand how cute this dog is. So skinny, if you turn him immediately face onto the camera, he's invisible.
I love so how cute. Long his legs are. He's a very leggy dog, right buddy? He doesn't understand what's going on. He's not into this right now.
He's kind of blinking a lot, actually. But the chat is blowing up for that dog.
Okay, buddy. The light is probably too bright for him. I'm gonna put him down.
Oh, poor guy. Okay, well, thank you for that. Everybody, thank you for hitting the like button so we get that. And Anna, thank you as well, not just for Charlie, but for being here on very short notice. Stepping in to do the show. I appreciate it, and I'm sure the audience appreciates it even more. You're doing the main show later on today. People can watch you there, right?
Yes. So check us out live, youtube.com/theyoungturks or tyt.com/live. We go live every day at 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern.
Awesome. Okay, Anna, thank you. Take care. It's been a little bit more than 3 weeks since the tragic and 100% needless shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, and a lot has happened. There's been many developments since then. Joining us on the program now to discuss is the aunt of Jacob Blake, as well as a retired litigator, Nikki Blake. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, how are you?
You know, I'm as good as anyone can be expected to be in 2020. You know, as I was saying when we were talking, my heart goes out to your entire extended family. You know, I can only imagine what things have been like. Can you tell us a little bit about Jacob's condition? How have things developed over the past few weeks?
I am in a situation where I have sort of developed a part of the West Coast response to this, but my family, my Midwest family and I are estranged, so I don't really, I'm not on the inside of that information.
Okay, and I know.
I'm hoping that this tragic situation will bring my family together.
And I know that you've been speaking out, you know, giving speeches, you know, in the wake of that incident. Can you tell me a little bit about some of that, about what you've been, you know, sort of hoping to accomplish in some of these efforts?
Yes, in 2017, I left the law in the middle of a trial, in part because I didn't any longer want to be the blackface of the law in Seattle when the law couldn't stop killing black men, right? So it's like my own personal demons have come to roost with me here.
You know, I was watching an interview that you gave where I think you said something to the effect of, you know, it was your family's turn, which is, you know, it's obviously, it's heartbreaking. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, sir. When my alumnus called me, he told me that my brother was dead, but there's actually a bunch of people in my family who have the same name. I think we think it's sort of a gifted name because my father ate at the White House for the work he did during the King era. And my brother's name is Jacob Stephen Blake III. My father's name was Jacob Stephen Blake Jr. And so when my alum was driving home from work on a late night shift, he heard that Jacob Blake had been shot in Kenosha. He thought it was my brother and he thought shot meant dead. So I thought my brother had been killed. But he said, hold on, because you know how many Jake Blakes are in your family. Let's hold and see who it is. So I didn't hold on because I lived my life out loud on Facebook and I posted that my brother had been shot dead. The Midwest family was quick to clarify that it was not my brother, it was my nephew and he was alive.
You know, you mentioned
why I wasn't surprised. I'm not surprised because I'm not surprised. I mean, because black people get shot by police in America and black people are ready to get shot by police in America. I figured it was my family's turn. Again, I mean, my family has been very revolutionary since I was in utero. I mean, I was marching in utero to turn my hometown, Evanston, Illinois, integrated. And so at least since 68, my family has been working on these issues. So it doesn't, it's not surprising that it would fit our family, that it would zone in on our family or any black family. We're all expecting to get shot now. America needs to know that.
And you know, when I think of the number of different incidents just during the most recent social movement that's been going on, the number of you know, horrible incidents, as you pointed out, you know, your family has been working on this. Many people have been working to fix the situation for decades and decades. What do you think about the social movement, even the protests that have sprung up, you know, in Kenosha since then? Do you feel like there is a chance that this will break through and finally help to fix the situation?
I've very snidely been saying for a long time they've finally screwed with the wrong family, right? But I actually felt like George Floyd was the family that was actually getting us changing. And I'm surprised a little bit that after, right in the middle of Floyd, we're dealing with the same stuff. We're not even done protesting Floyd. Seattle couldn't protest my brother because they were my brother's boy because they were protesting Floyd. We couldn't siphon off any of the people over from Floyd to deal with Blake. This is getting ridiculous.
It's just like you say, you don't even have proper time to grieve because of how quickly these come. And then you have the people who are in charge who hypothetically could do something. So few seem to really care, to really think that something needs to happen. I heard Attorney General William Barr, who was saying, you know, these are just a couple of different incidents. It's not anything like a wave. I imagine it must be disheartening to hear those who are in charge, the most important law enforcement officers in our country, implying that there's no basis for these protests, that it's people who are taking something more seriously than it should be.
No one who is protesting right now about Jake Blake is surprised by anything Mr. Barr says.
Yeah. And I assume probably doesn't put too much value on anything Mr. Barr says, considering his record on this topic.
Nothing coming out of the White House surprises anybody who's not a Trump supporter.
Do you think, you know, we have the social movement is going on. We're in the run up to an election. If somehow, if Donald Trump does lose and Joe Biden becomes president, what do you think about the prospects for change across the country and in this area in terms of police brutality and bias in law enforcement?
Police brutality against black men does not improve during Democratic administrations.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that he might be willing to do something, to enact some sort of federal regulations on police departments, or do you think that it's unlikely to make much of a difference?
One of the things that's happened in my small West Coast family is that I continue to express despair in public. My trans man son has gotten angry at me for doing that, right? So he came out and started making statements. He's made a statement to The Advocate and to the Pink Times, which is sort of the European Advocate, saying that even though his mother doesn't have hope, he has hope. Mm-hmm. So after he made those statements, the Breitbart set started attacking his life, harassing him. He's really become, both me and him have become a focus of the people who criticize Trump. And the part that makes me so very sad about that is I'm a very political person. I've always been political. My kid's not political. He just got angry that I appeared to have no hope for the future. And he said, Mom, if you have no hope, the kids will have no hope. So you have to have hope for the kids. So I'm the person who always tells my truth. I do not have any more hope, really, except for in the kids of the future. Elliot wrote a small poem about the hope he had and the hope that when his generation is charged, they will change the future, only to find commentary saying they would, if he were in their jurisdiction, they'd kick him in the balls. I think it would make sense to be angry at me because I'm not scared of him. I don't give a shit. I mean, if it's time to die, it's time to die. There are worse things to die for than this. Mm-hmm. But one doesn't want one's college freshman the first time they make a political statement and a statement of hope to have their life threatened by trolls on the internet.
Yeah, it's there doesn't seem to be anything that's off limits, anything that's sacred. Those who are fighting on the opposite side can be absolutely brutal, and you know, it's insult to injury considering all that you and your family have already been through. So my heart really does go out to you as you continue to process this, continue to try to, you know, push in the right direction, push for change. I'm so sorry for all that you've gone through, Nikki.
I will not stop talking about how evil this is.
And nor should you.
Me into the grave, I will go into the grave. My child appears going into his sophomore year of college to have the same reserve. But he didn't when he first got the responses. He told me he was very scared. But it seems like their response caused a response from our left, or from the far left, I believe. And he feels wrapped in the safety of that.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly a silver lining.
A poem that he wrote about hope. I mean,
exactly.
Assume that if they were mad at me, that would make sense. I've been trolling Trombies since 2016. But if they're mad at him, that doesn't make any sense. All he said was that we should have hope, that we shouldn't be hopeless, that this is not a thing that we can't change.
Yeah. 100%. Well, Nikki Blake, I want to thank you once again for joining us and, you know, telling us a little bit about what you've been, you know, going through, what you and your family have been going through. We really do appreciate it, and we hope that in some way things get better or at least easier for you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.